Again, this broadcast now is we're pooling efforts, and we are simulcasting with our two local radio stations, KCHU and KVAK in Valdez. We are also working together to provide this audio to the Alaska Public Radio Network, to the ABC News Radio, and to Alaskom, where other stations and other listeners can dial into the broadcast bridge to take the feed. I want to thank a number of people who are working today to make this possible. Throughout the week, we have been assisted by a number of technicians and support personnel from the Public Radio Network and from stations around the state, as well as many local volunteers. It looks like Don Cornett, the Expon spokesman, is about to begin, so we'll save our list of credits for the end. But again, these broadcasts are made possible through the efforts of many people, and we are indeed grateful. Don Cornett is the Exxon Alaska spokesman from Anchorage, and he'll be starting this press conference any moment now.
Can you outshout them?
We need one.
I think we should have one if you're going to be able to hear the answers. What do we do here?
We can hear you now.
Okay, we'll begin. Good evening. Good afternoon. I'll make an announcement about the future press conferences. Tomorrow's press conference will be at 11 o'clock, and for the next few days, kind of depending on how things are going. And we may try to go to press alerts after that to keep from bringing you back in here and giving you dull, repetitious information. We'll try to get it to you as things are happening. And if you have any comments on that, I'm sure I'll hear from you. We have with us today, on my far right, Nancy Lethko, who is with the Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance. And next is Alice Berkner, who is in charge of the Bird Rescue Center. And then Dr. Randall Davis to Alice's left, who is in charge of the Mammal Rescue Center. And then this gentleman you recognize, President Frank Iarossi of the Exxon Shipping Company. We will start off with Nancy. Yes.
Nancy Lethko is a local Valdezian member of a spokesman for the Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance.
Okay. Spell your last name.
Yes, my name is Nancy Lethko, and it's spelled L-E-T-H-C-O-E. And I'm vice president of the Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance. The Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance.
We're getting the sound taken care of.
There seems to be some question about the sound in the house. They're scurrying around. We seem to have our audio feed, but I'm not sure what the problem is elsewhere. You're listening to a broadcast of a press conference from the Valdez City Council Chambers. We're no longer in the Civic Center Ballroom. Now, this is Nancy Lethko from Valdez, Alaska.
The Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance does not condone boycotts against Exxon or any other business. The Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance does not condone violence. We are appalled that anyone would try to turn a monumental environmental tragedy into a human tragedy. We have appreciated the overwhelming outpour of support from those who wish to volunteer to clean up Prince William Sound. We would like to thank you and urge your patience. I have had the honor of being appointed to the State Federal Exxon Shoreside Cleanup Committee. This committee is composed of oil cleanup specialists from around the world. We are working very hard to develop guidelines and to get in place the logistics and equipment necessary to conduct an environmentally responsible cleanup. I expect that there will be an opportunity for volunteers to participate sometime in the future. The Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance wishes to extend its sincere appreciation to the frontline people who are out there as scientists, boatmen, cleanup crews. We know the hours and conditions have been harsh. We thank you for your monumental efforts. I would also like to make a more personal statement. For those who have lived here and cherished Prince William Sound, This has been a week of sleepless and tear-filled nights. I know that for many participating in the spill cleanup, it has also been a week of silent suffering. I hope that out of our shared grief and agony and ability to work together to assess, clean up, and rehabilitate our beloved Prince William Sound will arise. Finally, I hope that from our working together here may come a better ability to understand each other's needs and to develop mutually acceptable environmental legislation that will govern the future of oil in Alaska. Thank you.
This is Nancy Lefko of Valdez, Alaska, and now Don Cornett.
Will be Alice Bertner from the Bird Rescue Center.
Alice Bertner, in charge of the Bird Rescue Center set up at Prince William Sound Community College.
Alice Bertner, I think probably I've met most of you at some point during the spill. So far, we probably by the end of the day, we will be over 150 birds. The mortality at this point has been very low. I believe we've lost 4 animals. I'm sorry I couldn't get this out earlier, but we are releasing 5 birds this afternoon. I would expect that in the future we are probably going to be releasing a number of birds every day, and I'm hoping that we can get that news out to you because I know it's something that you're all going to be interested in. We're still trying to get as many taken care of as we can, and ask your cooperation and your patience. If there are any questions you want to ask, feel free to do so.
Doctor, why are you releasing the birds back into the sound?
We're not releasing them into the sound. They'll be released within the harbor.
But the chances are they'll migrate back out to where they were actually.
Not necessarily. They've been through a lot. We would expect that they would be staying within the release area. They're going to have to feed up and gain back some of those resources that they've lost, the stores of body fat, that kind of thing. It's been our experience in the past that they will remain for quite a while within the area where they are released.
How long is quite a while?
Oh, often it will depend on the species. Could be a matter of months, with some of the birds. One of the things we're working with is that animals like these that are the birds that are kept in captivity for long periods of time will start developing diseases connected with stress. And we want to minimize that, obviously, because it's going to compromise their survival if we don't.
Do you have any overall statistics on how many birds have died as a result of the oil spill and so forth?
I've been dealing with the live animals brought in. You'd have to ask the wildlife biologists out there who are censusing for those figures. I just don't have those available to me.
What are you going to break down of the how many otters you have and how many birds?
A species breakdown? I don't have that with me. I was drawing.
You have quite a few otters, haven't you?
Losses? Oh, otters. Dr. Davis will be talking on the otters. I'm Feathers and he's fur.
Do you have any particularly rare birds?
Not yet. Not yet. We haven't received any threatened or endangered species.
What are they largely?
Seabirds?
It's a mix. There are sea ducks, harlequins, old squaw, black scoter, white-winged scoters. We've got a couple of golden eyes.
Barrel's golden?
They're in transitional plumage. I'm not too sure what they are at this point. Some of the birds are going through molt from juvenile plumage into breeding plumage, so it's difficult to determine sometimes. We have loons, common loons. Of the alcids, we have guillemots and common murres.
Any eagles?
No eagles yet.
Do you know where these birds are coming from?
Oh, we are keeping track of the areas where they are picked up. Yes, very definitely. We're getting them from around Night Island. Some have been brought in from the Green Island area. All the locations, when possible, are noted. Each bird has an individual record.
Are you tagging the birds before you release them?
The birds will be, actually that's going on right now, they will all be banded with several, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service bands, yes.
Do you treat every bird or do you practice triage?
We treat every bird that comes in. When you say practice triage, there are different ways of practicing triage. You can triage on a species level. Then you can do a physical triage within that. So far, we have not had to. And you know, what do you mean by that? Are we putting birds down and saying, you know, is it? We haven't had to do that yet. The numbers have been too few. We would definitely give special attention to any of the threatened and endangered species or species of unusual local interest. Diminishing species, but so far it's been pretty much of a mix of birds whose populations are pretty healthy.
What time are the cleaned up birds going to be released today?
Excuse me, that's going on right now.
Are you upset that there are so few out of the many millions of birds that are out there?
Well, there were fairly low levels of birds out there. Obviously, the fewer birds affected in the spill, the better it is for everyone concerned. Upset that so few are coming in, I anticipated that the first time I was up here in Valdez and saw the terrain. And it was obvious then that the logistics of retrieval would be very, very difficult. This is not the kind of a situation that we've ever encountered in the lower 48. And there's a lot of, I've said before, there are a lot of stereotypes when it comes to oil spills, and rapid and easy retrieval of birds is one of those stereotypes.
Where exactly are they being released? Right from the center, or, I mean, do you go to a place on the harbor, or where do you actually do that?
Well, they're going to be released further on down in or around the Valdez Arm. I'm not sure the I've seen it on the map. This is where it's going to go.
We have an obvious
but, entrance. Yeah, hold on.
On the other side.
Got to get my glasses.
Alice Berkner, the bird expert, is identifying the map, the point where the birds are planned to be released. Again, this is a press conference under the auspices of Exxon, being broadcast live from the Valdez City Council chambers.
These birds have so many TV cameras around. I think right now they might be at the point where they'll give you left profile, full face, right profile, whatever you want. These are media trained birds I'm beginning to believe. No, the stress has been continual. It's not going to be as controlled a situation when the release is. You're not going to have to worry about do we use flash, do we not use flash. We do have an announcement to make later on concerning the press involvement of release and that kind of thing. We've had to figure out the logistics of that too.
Okay, Alice Berkner is looking at the map, and she's looking at an area for locals. It's Anderson Bay. That's west of the Alyeska Pipeline Terminal across the port from the city of Valdez.
We've tried to cooperate with you as best we can, but now it's time to consider the birds and do what's best for them.
Alice, can you tell us about the birds that are not being recovered, about the mortality rate there, how long this is going to go on?
I would say it's going to go on, Jerry, until it's finished. There are some things that you just can't predict in a spill. Again, as far as the numbers of birds that have been affected, that have died out there, I don't have those figures. I'm concentrating on the live birds, but I'm sure that those figures are available to you because someone is out there checking on them every day, trying to get as accurate a count as they can.
The birds that you cannot capture and bring in, what is the chances of survival for any of them?
Minimal. if they haven't become oil contaminated, the chances of survival are minimal. Now, there may be a few birds out there that only have a few spots on them. If it doesn't, if that oil contamination doesn't penetrate all the way through to the skin, they might have a chance to survive.
What do you think is going to happen when all the migration seasons is almost upon us here, isn't it? Right, what happens? Will the birds veer away from this sake, do you imagine, or will they just fall in it?
It depends on the birds. There are some birds, and there's been a lot of observation and research around this subject. You know, how does one discourage a bird from getting into an oil spill? There are a few species, unfortunately, you don't see an awful lot of them in this area that do seem to avoid oil. But for the most of them, they don't recognize oil for being what it is. Some people feel that the birds are attracted to oil spills. But a lot of this is not proven. It's just a lot of theory and conjecture. The birds are not going to arrive en masse. It's going to be a developing kind of thing. We're just hoping for the best.
Tell us, you've seen birds from other spills. Are these birds soiled and sick and injured the same as birds you've seen in other circumstances? Is there a difference?
Yes. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. I'll anticipate one of the questions for later. No, we didn't call this press conference so that Alice could release birds. So, our next speaker will be Dr. Randall Davis, and he'll talk about the mammals.
That was Don Cornett of Exxon.
Well, I was asked to come up here to coordinate the sea otter cleaning and rehabilitation program. And we've been trying to tackle that from every aspect possible, from the capture right through to the final rehabilitation and ultimately the release of the animals. We have been trying to organize a program under challenging circumstances. When I arrived a week ago, there was nothing in place for otters, and we have, with the help of a number of people, including a lot of very fine folks from the community and the surrounding communities, been able to make a very good effort at obtaining these oiled animals and restoring their fur and getting them back to normal. We are presently hoping to expand into a new facility on Tuesday morning, and at that time we'll be able to increase our capacity to about 80 animals. We're presently quite limited in our present facility to about 20 animals. Every effort is being made to get this facility online, and we anticipate that we will be moved in on Tuesday. We have boats out in the Sound collecting otters, and we also are working with folks who are bringing in animals, and these would include both fishermen and other people who are traveling out in the Sound. We are also working in coordination with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they now have two vessels out in the Sound in the vicinity of Night Island, and they are also collecting. So at this point, we have at least four boats out collecting. We hope to have a fifth boat out by Monday. And at that time, we'll be able, I believe, to recover, clean, and treat, once we're in our new facility, at least 25 otters, possibly more, per day. It's important to recognize that these animals are very labor-intensive and, in some respects, delicate animals. On average, it takes 3 to 4 hours of labor to clean the animal, and that would be with 4 or 5 people working at one time. It takes the knowledgeable expertise of a veterinarian to make sure that the animal is stable. And it takes a lot of coordinated effort to arrange for husbandry and feeding, water quality, all of these things which we normally have at aquariums, and we spend millions of dollars to build over a period of time. We're trying to organize here in the period of a few days, and it's not ideal. We're simply doing the best we can. It's my hope that we'll eventually have a number of otters completely restored. I can't tell you how many. And that they'll ultimately be released. It's my understanding that they will not be released into the sound, that they'll be released at another remote location so as not to return to the site of the spill and become recontaminated. That final release will be directed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we will not be directly involved in that. To date, we have had about 30 animals come into the facility. We presently have 17. The other 11 died. Some of them died before they were cleaned, and some of them have died subsequently to the cleaning process. I think I'll take questions if you have any at this point.
That sounds like a pretty high mortality rate.
It is. But I don't, yeah, compared to what? We have never been in this circumstance before. For the last 3 or 4 years, my colleagues and I down in California have been working on methods to clean and rehabilitate oiled sea otters. We are using those techniques now, and they're paying off. Nevertheless, we've never had an opportunity to really put them to the test. And these, as I said, these animals are delicate in some respects, and they are going to suffer both from hypothermia and possibly from secondary effects due to the ingestion of oil. We really don't know the full effect. I will be very happy if we have a 60% recovery.
Yeah, a follow-up to that. Is part of this problem because because these otters are so far away and there's a lot of transit time and all of that?
Transit time is not a problem. We have at our disposal very good helicopter support. Our catcher boats do not come back into town. They remain on site capturing otters. All of the animals are brought in by helicopter. That's a 30 to 40 minute transit time. The capture process, is, as Alice pointed out, is very challenging in this wilderness situation, a very rugged coastline. And that is a major problem in recovering the animals.
What is the substance you use to clean them, that shampoo sort of stuff that we see?
Dawn dishwashing detergent. You may laugh. It is actually a very sophisticated detergent and emulsifier, and during our studies in California, we worked with some of the chemists at Procter & Gamble, and they helped us in testing a variety of products, and we came to the conclusion that this was one of the best. It is also the product that Alice uses to clean her birds.
Are we going to see this in a national ad now, I hope?
Can you
assure us that none of these animals will wind up at SeaWorld or other aquariums, or are there plans to also transfer these animals down south?
I can assure you they will end up there. And let me tell you why. We are presently limited, as I mentioned, by our facility. And there are aquaria up and down the coast of California that have volunteered to take these animals off our hands so that we may bring more into the facility. During the next couple of days, we will be sending 6 to 12 otters out of here. And these otters are going to be cared for by trained personnel at this aquaria and held. Their final disposition will be up to the department or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. None of these aquaria are looking to exploit this opportunity, and they are donating their time and labor, and it's making our job a lot easier. If the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service determines these otters should be brought back, then there would be no question on the part of the aquaria to return them.
We're talking about just a dozen, or could it go up to many, many, many dozens?
It could possibly go up to many, many dozens if we need that kind of assistance. If our new facility, if we find that with our new facility we're able to handle the load that is coming in, get these otters cleaned and rehabilitated and out of here, then we won't require the resources of these other aquaria, and then we won't send them out of Prince William Sound.
But I mean, I'm still not clear. I want to make sure I get this straight, because it is very controversial. Are you saying that many, many dozens may never come back to the wild, that they may remain in aquaria?
No. And no aquaria that I know of can handle many dozens of otters. If that many go out, most of them will come back.
All but a dozen, maybe, or a handful.
Most aquaria can only handle a couple of otters.
Where specifically are they going?
The first location is SeaWorld in San Diego. We have also had, and let me say that the reason that that is our first choice is because they have the largest and best equipped facilities on the West Coast, and the SeaWorld people are very sensitive to the feelings of the people that live in Prince William Sound, and I'm certain you all know that there's a history of SeaWorld being in Prince William Sound, and it hasn't always been the best of circumstances. They are very sensitive to that, and they required a lot of assurance on the part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that they were going to be invited to do this, and that it would be understood that they were providing this as a service, and it was not to be looked upon as taking advantage of a circumstance. The other aquaria that have offered are the Vancouver Aquarium and the Point Defiance Aquarium. These other two aquariums don't have quite the facilities, don't have quite the manpower, so we thought we would go with the best equipped facility first and then work from there. Please bear in mind, these animals are incredibly labor intensive and very expensive to maintain.
Do you have any overall numbers, how many otters have been affected by the oil, how many, you know, have died, how many you'll be getting?
I don't. I think the Fish and Wildlife Service would be the best source of that information, because they would have an idea of the numbers of animals to be found in the affected area at this time of the year. So in a worst case situation, you could take that number to be the number oiled. I would doubt that all of them have been oiled. In terms of the number of animals that we get in here, it's difficult for me to say, but before this is over, I wouldn't be surprised if we have seen over 100 animals.
How many times do you see otter?
There are a couple of different ways. What we are finding is that the capture is very easy, because these animals are often hauled out on the beach, and it's just a matter of going over and picking them up, or putting a net over them. Nevertheless, we are running this operation with skilled animal handlers, and we would discourage folks from going out and handling these animals. There have been a few incidents where inexperienced people have been bitten, and although these animals may be in a distressed condition, they're still capable of injuring folks.
Do you know how many bites?
Do you have any?
No, I don't. A couple.
Do you have any idea how the habitat of these sea otters is going to be affected? In other words, will these animals be affected down through the years?
I'm not the person to answer that question. You'd want to talk to a marine ecologist.
I have another question for you. Turning to other mammals, do you know if any whales have died?
Not to my knowledge. I have seen some sea lions, and I've seen sea lions in the spill area. I have seen killer whales adjacent to it. We don't anticipate any major effect on sea lions and killer whales as we would with sea otters, because these other animals, rely primarily on blubber for insulation. and that is not affected by oil contacting the skin. It's the contamination of the fur of the sea otter that is the big source of problem. Nevertheless, I wouldn't want to completely rule out any toxic side effects, although there's pretty good evidence that any side effects from being in the oil would probably not be lethal.
What about eating the plankton and oil contaminating the food chain?
Possibly, but I'm not the one that would should answer that question. The marine ecologist should.
Are there kind of a vet shortage going on there? Is there anything to be done about that? Is Exxon finding more vets? Are there only certain vets qualified? I understand that it's been slowing things down a bit.
We did, well, in fact, the vet situation is not slowing us down. It was really facilities and getting them up that was, we've overcome that problem. In fact, we are doing very well with vets. We have 5 vets here now, and we've had offers of other vets to come in, and we will bring in every available resource to ensure that these animals get the best possible treatment.
How long do you expect your effort to continue here?
As short as possible. But I can see it going on for at least 3 or 4 weeks.
It seems that you and the Gurkha and several other people are suffering from colds, and you yourselves almost look like you're suffering from hypothermia. What kind of hours are you guys working? When do you get up in the morning? When do you go to bed and all that?
This morning I went to bed at 4 o'clock, and I got up about 8, and I would say that many of our folks are putting in 18-hour days or more.
Are you getting paid?
By my home institution, I am a research biologist at the SeaWorld Research Institute. The SeaWorld Research Institute is not the corporate SeaWorld organization. We're a nonprofit research organization that is loosely affiliated with SeaWorld, and I'm being paid by SeaWorld as I would if I were conducting research down there.
How many people do you have along with you?
From SeaWorld?
From SeaWorld, right.
Three people plus myself. That may be increased by 1 or 2 in the next few days.
How long can an oiled otter survive without treatment?
Depends on how badly oiled it is, obviously. But any oiling beyond 50% of its body surface area, we would consider serious and probably put the animal in serious jeopardy. That may sound a little vague, but in fact, we really don't have any good, solid evidence as to what degree of oiling they might be able to survive. But I would say it would have to certainly be less than 50% of their body surface area.
Have you had cases that were so far gone you had to practice euthanasia?
Yes. 1 or 2 animals were brought in, and the veterinarians determined that their condition was so serious that they were euthanized.
Yes.
Is it correct to conclude that they don't seem to have a sense of danger from the oil? Do they swim right into it, or do they try to get away from it, or what? Do you have an idea?
I'm uncertain about that. There's a little bit of anecdotal information both ways, but there's no good scientific evidence that they would avoid an oil spill.
Are you releasing any of the animals that you have now back into the wild, or are they all going to the aquarium?
It's our ultimate hope to place all of the animals that we get rehabilitated down in floating pens here in the marina. And as quickly as possible, those animals will be relocated by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to an area outside of Prince William Sound. The reason that is necessary is because there's good evidence that these animals will return to the area in which they were captured. And we don't want that, obviously. So it would be probably best to move them out of this area so they cannot return to the spill area. But let me say that that's a tentative plan, and it really will be the decision of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as to where they go. That is not something we are determining.
How long would it be before Prince William Sound is a safe habitat for returning otters? Do you have any idea?
When we've cleaned up the oil. Is that what you mean?
I guess it is. I'm trying to get a sense of whether this is going to... If you respond to another emergency somewhere else 6 months from now, and you have sea otters that are injured there, and you're thinking about relocating them, is Prince William Sound going to be clean enough to relocate those otters here by then?
Well, most of the bulk of the oil is off the surface of the water and off the beaches. Then the immediate problem would be solved. I would like to couch that comment by saying that if the habitat is affected, the sea otters' food supply, that might be another consideration as to whether this immediate area would be best suited for the introduction of more otters. And that would be a determination by on the part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologists.
That was Dr. Randall Davis.
And the next speaker will be Frank Irossi.
And now the president of Exxon Shipping, Frank Irossi. The voice we just heard was Don Cornett of Exxon. Now Frank Irossi of Exxon Shipping.
Welcome to day 10. The Exxon response team now numbers 211 people, of which 93 are Exxon employees. We have 300 people in work crews and about another 250 in work boats and a number of vessels we have going on. Let me start by updating you on the cargo transfer. As of 2 p.m., we had transferred a total of 943,000 barrels to the Exxon Baton Rouge and the Exxon San Francisco. Of this total, 880,000 is pure oil, and 63,000 is an oily water mixture. We estimate there currently is 120,000 to 150,000 barrels of oil remaining on board. About half of this is pure oil in the bottom of three undamaged tanks, and remainder, the other 50%, is an oil layer of about 12 inches to 24 inches, which is floating on top of about a 32-foot head of seawater in the damaged tanks. We completed the transfer to the Exxon San Francisco this afternoon and moved the vessel off so that we could bring the Exxon Baytown. That's the third vessel we're going to have in this lightering. We wanted to bring the Baytown alongside before we lost daylight. Well, we will transfer to the Baytown the remaining 60 to 70,000 barrels of pure oil, which is in those three undamaged tanks. And then we're going to begin to skim off the top of the damaged tanks that 12 to 24 inch layer, or as much of it as we can get. And we plan to finish all of the transfer activities by tomorrow afternoon. Let me move to... So let me just say right now we've got about 88 to 90% of that 1 million barrels that was on the vessel when we got here, on a damaged vessel. We've gotten in the order of 88% of it off.
What about the oily water?
Can I just come back and I'll get to it. It's the 10th day. If I lose my thought process, I'll be here for a long time. Okay, moving on to some. Okay, I'll answer that question. The oily water? What was the question?
What about it? Is it?
The one that was, the 63,000 that was transferred?
The rest of it. You had said something the other day about it.
Well, you know, the 10 of those tanks have holes in the bottom, so there's no way we will be able, until we patch the holes, to get the water out. What we're trying to do, you know, is a natural process. The oil floats to the top. So we've shifted the last part of the lightering, we've shifted to the undamaged tanks, The damaged tanks that we got to first are now decanting, as we say. The oil is flowing to the top. So the last process we'll do using the Baytown is to go back into those tanks with a skimmer head, flathead, so that we can just skim the top of that oil and get as much of that oil off the top. We're never going to have pure seawater in those tanks. So there will be some oily mixture in that water. Looking at the salvage, we've completed planning for refloating the vessel and moving it to a safe haven for what we have to do next, which is a detailed inspection of the vessel, both internal and external, and also to then carry out any temporary repairs which we feel are needed. We hope to have final Coast Guard approval on Monday for the refloating plan. The vessel salvage chief should arrive from Seattle on Monday. This is a very large salvage vessel, and it'll be assisted during the refloat by four of the large docking tugs at Alyeska. We have requested permission from the cognizant authorities to move the vessel to Outside Bay. That's on Naked Island. It's the southwest corner of Naked Island. I don't know if I can move off a little bit. It's right here. This is the current location of the vessel. This is where we plan to move it.
I have asked.
It's a fairly sheltered harbor. It's shallow enough that we can anchor. The pilots are satisfied with it. The divers are satisfied with it. I think we have just about all of the agencies signed off, except as of last night, I think there was one we had to get to. But it seems like it'll be a good consensus position. We will then conduct that detailed inspection, and what we're trying to determine is whether we could proceed out of Prince William Sound and off to a repair yard with the vessel as it is right now. We really can't make that assessment now. If we need to make temporary repairs, then we'll have to make provision to do that in Outside Bay. Let me talk about the oil spill, the 240,000 barrels that were on the water. I'm going to move over to this map. I'll try to shout, but if I do that, I'll probably start coughing, but I'll give it my best.
You want me to show you the things here?
I'll give it a try. I think I can do that. I'll move over here. This is the entire sound we're looking at. This is Nick. Okay.
There's a fair amount of movement. We're trying to get the maps over to where President Frank Arossi of Exxon Shipping can both be at the microphones and at the maps as he gives his press briefing. Well, this is a live broadcast of an Exxon press briefing from the Valdez City.
Okay, this may be a little better.
Valdez, Alaska.
This is Naked Island, the first island that was impacted. You may recall the spill location was here Monday night. And it was driven in this direction by those gale winds. Naked Island got it first. Came down in this direction, down both sides of Night Island. I was out yesterday afternoon. We've had people all morning and in the afternoon. Right now, the major concentration of the oil is down both sides of the southern end of Night Island. There are some continuing isolated slicks in this area. But the heavy concentration is here and here and heading out the Montague Straits. Just as an overview, we've got our initial beach cleanup going on here and here. We need to stay very close to our support base because we're supporting this from Valdez, which means we get the people out there, get them back at night. We don't intend to do any more of that. And I'll go on to that. Skimmers, we have one here in Herring Bay. We have two by the ship. Ship is boom. We've got a cleanup activity going on here. It's getting the heavy concentrations of oil off the water. And that's Exxon-supported ADEC activity. We are still in what I call the Battle of Sawmill Bay. You may recall that after the oil
blew in this direction. We were given the challenge to protect four very important sites, fish hatchery sites. Three are along here, the fourth one is Sawmill Bay. We were successful, have been successful in protecting those three. The Battle of Sawmill Bay is going to go on for another 3 or 4 days. We have a major concentration of our resources in this location. We've got 9 of our skimmers working here. We've got 3 rows of boom defenses. We also have deflection booms here. I'm going to shift over to this larger scale map. It's really the same picture as you see here. This is Sawmill Bay, the hatchery that we're concentrating on protecting. These are the 9 skimmers, basically as they're deployed. This is a heavy concentration of oil. It's also oil here. There's a lot of it coming down the Montague Straits and out into the ocean. There's some oil coming down the Latouche Passage, and there's also some oil streaming down these two inlets. We started, we asked permission from the Coast Guard and started early this afternoon aerial dispersant spray in this location. This oil is 10 days old, but we wanted to give it a chance, and it looks like we are successful in dispersing some of the oil as it comes out of the Montague Passage and Montague Straits. We're not getting the heavy mousse or the heavy emulsion, but we are getting a lot of the oil that's trailing along with it. And of course, what we're trying to do is prevent